And faces. Also, just a reminder that when you do type in the chat box, that can be seen on the YouTube. So please refrain from using the chat box if possible. Okay, I'm just going to wait for the. Okay, we're about to go live. Just going to wait for the okay. Okay, good evening. My name is Paula Reet. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough. It's Monday the 21st of February 2022, and it's my pleasure to welcome everyone to this evening's council meeting. The time being 5:30, I would like to now officially declare this meeting open. Welcome to councillors and staff and to anyone who is watching along at home from YouTube. I wish to advise that it is Council's policy that meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. So in accordance with that policy, I'll ask the General Manager to please confirm that the recording has started.
Confirmed, Mayor.
Thank you, General Manager. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Wass and Councillor Street. From our staff, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Stevenson, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, the Executive Officer, Engineering Services, Mr Vidal, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have no apologies this evening. We move now to page one, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 2 that was held on the 7th of February 2022 be confirmed as a true record. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bastone. All those in favour? Thank you. Passed unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. There were no workshops held since the last council meeting. Moving now to declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they would like to declare? I have two that I would like to declare. The first one relates to DA 2021-578 in relation to a development application for a property at Tingira Road, Blackmans Bay. I will not take part in that decision, so I will hand over to the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, during that debate, and I will switch off my camera and microphone and leave the room, but somebody will summons me back when that debate is over. I've taken advice from council staff in that's the best way that we can deal with this, given that we're actually meeting in online. My second declaration of interest is in relation to DA 2021-678, which relates to an application by a vineyard at Flower Pot in relation to extension of some hours. My partner is a member of their wine club and I've visited there many times, so I thought I should place that on record, but I still intend to take part in that debate. Moving now to transfer of agenda items on page 2. Is there any item that a councillor would wish to move from closed open session or open into closed? No, thank you. Still on page 2, questions about notice from the public. As we're holding the meeting online, of course, there are no questions that can be done on notice from the public. However, we do move now to questions on notice that have been submitted. And if members of the community would like to ask any questions, they can email them to us at kc@kingborough.com. www.tas.gov.au and they will be placed on the next meeting agenda. So we had two questions from the public. One was in relation to the significant tree assessment. That was from Ms. Kate Lucas, and an officer's response from Dr. Stevenson. The second question related to play space at Spring Farm and Whitewater Park Estates, and that was from Mr. David Bain, with an officer's response from Mr. Smee. So we turn to page three, questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have questions without notice? So Councillor Grace, and then I'll go with the order of hands that are appearing in the sidebar. Councillor Grace.
Yes.
Councillor Grace, you're on mute.
Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thanks, okay. I just have one question, and I have received a number of inquiries regarding council selling some land at 27 Pearl Place. Regarding the power outages on Friday the 28th of January, and a further outage on Sunday the 30th of January, as to a power cable that was damaged by the construction of the new wall that council approved on council land. So my question is, who will be paying the bill for the replacement of the cable?
Okay, I can't see my... I'll ask perhaps the general manager. Look like he's putting his light on. Mr. Arnold, are you able to assist us with that?
Thank you, Mayor. That one hasn't been brought to my attention, but Councillor Grace, I'm happy to take that one on notice and provide a written response.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just waiting to see who was next. I think it might have been Councillor Bastone. Yes, Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you to Mr. Reeve, I'm just wondering when the sealing of Harvey Road on Bruny Island is to commence. Do we have a time yet?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, if you recall when we went through the budget deliberations last year, I know it was a little while ago, but what we discussed was actually putting the project to bridge across financial years. So we're just in the process of actually designing those works there. So we expect it won't be too late this financial year that we'll get a start on those works.
Okay, thank you. And probably to Mr. Smee, through you, Mayor. When will the council start doing maintenance on Mills Reef Park at Alona? We gave the land to the community, but with the understanding that we were going to maintain the land. Just wondering when the maintenance will start on it.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the decision of council was that the local community had to prove that they had a use for the land, which they have done in terms of turning it into a community park, but there's yet to be any negotiation with council over the maintenance. The park is not yet developed and has certainly not been handed over to council to maintain, so those discussions would need to take place between the community association and council.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Next I had Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you to Mr. Reeve, I was just wondering if there was an update, please, on the pedestrian counts on Beach Road in Kingston Beach and how that report is going, because I believe that was meant to come back to council in February.
Mr. Reeve.
Yes, we certainly have done a lot of the prelim work in terms of some pedestrian counts and some traffic counts. We are running a little bit behind in terms of actually getting that report back to council, just with some staff that have actually been off work, but we're hoping to get that up in the next 4 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladrat. Next I had Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question relates to an update, if possible, on progress for the installation of a locked box to store beach wheelchairs by the Kingston Beach Surf Life Saving Club to enable access down the new access ramp for people with a disability.
I can answer that, and then the General Manager might be able to give an update. So following some discussions about the location of that facility, which will store, it was part funded by Kingborough Council and part funded by the Surf Life Saving Club, and it will, we had to get a purpose-built storage locker manufactured. That's now been done, and we've just been locating it in an appropriate place. We're very much aware that there are sensitivities amongst the community about having large structures located on the foreshore, as we saw when there was some Tazewater infrastructure installed on the foreshore at Blackmans Bay Beach recently. So discussions have taken place with the Surf Life Saving Club. There's now been an agreement that it will be located at the grassed area in front of the toilet block at Kingston Beach on Osborne Esplanade, and the slab has been poured last week. So as soon as that is ready to cure, the concrete is cured, there's just some signage that needs to go onto the storage locker, and it'll be put in place, and the wheelchairs will then be made available, and people will be able to access that facility 24 hours a day using an MLAC universal key.
Thank you, that's wonderful. The anticipated date for the commencement of the 28-day consultation on the significant tree register, when does Council expect that 28-day consultation to start, please?
I believe that is just about to start, but I'm just looking amongst the staff who might be able to help us with that. Dr. Stevenson?
Through you, Mayor, I was just trying to check back on my emails, and Ms. Tyler Moore might have a more exact date, but we're certainly close. We have to get the website information up before we start the consultation, and we have to line up the letters going out with the website information, but it's certainly not far away.
I did see Ms. Tyler Moore just had to put her hand up momentarily. Do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
Yes, through you, Mayor, it's intended to commence that in Saturday's Mercury on Saturday.
This coming Saturday. Thank you very much.
You know, I thought she would have.
Thank you. Now, I still have Councillor Westwood and Councillor Midgley with their hands up. Is that just,
yes,
do you have other questions?
One more question from me about your meeting, Mayor, with Primary Health Tasmania representatives on the 14th of January. Just a high-level overview of that. I realise it's quite a few weeks ago now, regarding the lack of youth mental health services in Kingborough. Just wondering if you could give us a brief update.
Sure. So that was a meeting that Dr. Stevenson and I had with, I think it was around four different representatives from Primary Health Tasmania, in relation to the needs of young people in Kingborough to access more timely mental health services, because there was a period of time when we did have Headspace having an outreach centre here. Unfortunately, that ceased some time ago. Whilst they appreciated the growth that we're experiencing and some of the barriers such as transport, they were very honest with us about one of the major issues is actually the lack of availability of qualified psychologists. So I think, as we know, there's a statewide and indeed I think I'd say an Australian-wide shortage of psychologists at the moment. Those that are in both public and private practice have significant waiting lists, so that does cause a range of challenges. They did offer us, as a follow-up, they did provide us with a range of resources and links that we are going to sort of disseminate to via our social media and so on, where young people can access more immediate help like Kids Helpline and that sort of thing. But it's not an acceptable situation. It's a concern right around the state. I understand it, particularly in regional areas. I would hope that it's something as a longer term plan that the University of Tasmania takes on board and the state government, and there's some incentive for them to actually offer more places within psychology. There is no short, easy solution to this, unfortunately, except for continuing to lobby to have a presence here as psychologists become available.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley, is your hand still up for any reason? I will come back to you. You've already had one question, so I'll go. Councillor Cordova. Sorry?
I haven't asked any questions yet.
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon, Councillor Midgley.
Okay, maybe because we saw each other today. thank you, Mayor. So my first question is in regards to Gormley Drive in Kingston, and I'm wondering if staff have received any emails or concern from the community in regards to the safety of this road. Often when I'm there picking up my kids 5-6 days a week, a local person mentions to me about the state of the road there.
I'm sure Mr. Reeve would like to talk about that, but out of interest, as I was actually driving down it last Friday, I made the exact comment to a staff member who was in the car with me, why hasn't this been sealed? Because it is certainly a challenging road. But Mr. Reeve, would you like to provide us with some further information, please?
Through you, Mayor. Look, I haven't personally received anything, but that doesn't necessarily mean there isn't people out there who use the road and I get dissatisfied with the current surfacing. Certainly the idea was to develop a lot more in that particular area there in terms of the overall master plan there and look at what we're going to be doing with that access road as part of that. However, it will come to the point of actually saying, well, how long do we actually wait and do we need to actually go and put in a different surfacing type there because it may be some time away. So we did do some work going back last year on Gormley Drive in terms of actually repairs to it, which allows a reasonable base for the road there. So it would be possible to go back there and put a seal on top if we wanted to. So it'd be something that we'd probably go away and have a look at and cost out and work out whether or not that's worthwhile putting forward for the next budget.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve.
Thank you, Mayor. Question raised at the Bruny Island Community Association that I attended with Councillor Grace and Councillor Bastone in regards to the South Bruny National Park Management Plan and the concerns there for Cloudy Bay Beach, beach access and the camping area. I'm wondering if at all the association made reference that hasn't been updated for quite a while and it would be good to look at revisiting that in regards to the high amount of usage around the beach and beach access and the behaviour sometimes not so great at the camping area. I'm wondering at all if staff are aware if council are involved in any discussions regarding this.
I'm just trying to work out if this would be Mr. Smee or Mr. Reeve. I'm thinking Mr. Smee. Any takers? Thank you.
Sorry, Mayor, I can't help on this one. I haven't had any discussions. Dr. Stevenson may have through the Bruny tourism work that she does, but no, not something I've been involved in.
Thank you. Dr. Stevenson.
No, I'm sorry, I'd have to take on notice.
Thank you. And a further question that's been on my list to raise for quite a while that's been noted to me by local residents of Whitewater Creek about the platypus that lives there. I'm not sure if there's just one or a couple, but in regards to just the water quality and if at all we are aware, I know staff are aware there is a platypus living there, but do we at all look at that habitat, the water quality, and have we looked at any environmental projects regarding the platypus habitat for Whitewater Creek, as we know is sometimes full of not so great amounts of rubbish from local building sites?
I'm trying to look at the list of names and find you the right staff member for Dr. Stevenson. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Midgley, I can't answer it fully and I'm happy to provide further information as a follow-up, but we do have a program of monitoring for Whitewater Creek as well as a range of restoration projects. The water quality is very much affected by the rain flow, it changes very rapidly. I do know that as a local resident that walks along there a fair bit, but we certainly have an active program around Whitewater Creek.
Thank you, Dr. Stevenson. As someone who lives nearby that, I've never seen the platypus, darn it. And I walk the track all the time. Councillor Grace, did you have another question? I'm going to unmute you. I can't unmute you. You have to unmute yourself.
Okay. Sorry. You and I met regarding the Margate Tavern. I noted it wasn't in your communications, or did your communications end before we actually met?
So I don't tend to list in my communications all the what I would refer to as the internal meetings that I have with councillors, because we go on for pages and pages and pages. So I tend to only list the meetings that I have that mainly are particular project groups or external people.
Okay, thank you.
I've got Councillor Cordova. I beg your pardon, Councillor Cordova. You were before Councillor Grace. I apologise for that. It's really funny where everyone is on my screen, where I have to look multiple places. So my apologies.
That's okay. Thank you, Mayor. My question is about cat management. At least 600,000 native animals are killed in Kingborough each year from domestic cats alone. And from March the 1st, 2022, a person must not keep more than 4 cats over the age of 4 months on their property without a permit, and all cats over the age of 4 months must be microchipped and desexed, among other provisions around breeding cats, for example, and requiring the need to be part of a recognised cat organisation. My question was, in the lead up to the 1st of March, how is council preparing? Is everything on track, and will councillors be given an update about any ongoing compliance issues that relate to the new cat management provisions?
Thank you. Look, I agree with you. That's a significant issue for the municipality, and Dr. Stevenson would be able to give us an update in relation to the preparations for those regulations coming online.
Through you, Mayor, we have started providing some community alerts through the Chronicle and our socials and our website. In terms of compliance in relation to these new regulations, we, as with a lot of these types of activities, it's responsive rather than proactive compliance, which was always the intent of the government's legislation, because otherwise it would be a new cost impact, a new a cost shift to councils. However, we, as you know, do co-resource a cat management officer, Kayleen, and we're also plugged into the and still in the tail end of delivering the last phase of the regional cat management project. And so there's a really strong opportunity to have synergies around those activities. But our focus will continue to be an educative role more than a compliance role.
Thank you. And Kayleen does a terrific job. I hope we stay on top of it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, your hand is still up. Did you have another question?
Apologies. No, sorry, I put it down.
I didn't want to miss you a second time. Thank you. If there are no further questions without notice from councillors, then we move to page 3, which is questions on notice from councillors, of which we had a number there. The first one was from Councillor Watts in relation to COVID-19 data. with an officer's response from Mr. Smee. The second one was from Councillor Gladerite in relation to water play equipment at Kingston Park and an officer's response from Mr. Smee. The next one was from Councillor Bastone in relation to the Beretta reuse shop with an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. The open session of Council now adjourns at 5:54 p.m. and planning authority commences at 5:54 p.m. So we're on page 5. Just a reminder, we're sitting as a planning authority. Our first item is PSA 2021-1, proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 of rezoning from rural resource zone to environmental living zone at 2015 and 2187 Bruny Island Main Road, Great Bay. I have a mover in Councillor Gladerite. Do I have a seconder, please, in Councillor Fox? Councillor Gladerite.
Thank you. Thanks for reading out the title of the officer's report. The application meets all of the considerations required under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 and is recommended for approval. The intention of the rezoning is to align the zoning with the current land use practices in the area and also to facilitate feedlot subdivision. I did have a question. This report is a pre-public exhibition and therefore the proposed amendment has not yet been advertised. I was just wondering why this is coming to us now and not once we've received all of the representations.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, this is known as a Section 43A application, which means it's a combined application as a rezoning and an application. The legislation requires that it must be initiated by council in the first instance, so that means prior to advertising. Then once it goes to advertising for 28 days, if there are representations, then the planning department will prepare a Section 39 report, which will list all the representations and provide commentary as to whether the amendment should be amended, stay the same, or any other commentary in there for the council laws to consider before it goes to the Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tallamore. Councillor Gladerite, did you have any further comments?
No further comments.
Thank you. I had Councillor Fox next, and then Councillor Bastone, and then Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question, and that is, as it shows in the diagram, that council owns an airport very right next door to this subdivision, and there's no mention in the report of any potential conflict or impact that the subdivision may have on the airport or vice versa. And I'm wondering whether this needs to be addressed.
Thank you. Ms. Tyler Moore, are you able to assist us with that, please?
Through you, Mayor, that is correct. That airport, which is still owned by council but leased to the public, or leased to someone independent, is there. The report doesn't make a lot of commentary about it because the planning scheme doesn't provide direction towards considering it. Something that is often directed, particularly in the rural resource zone, is that new uses don't fetter agricultural uses. The scheme really is aiming to protect agricultural uses for obvious reasons of production and food bowl, the importance of that, but it doesn't lend itself to the airport. If someone was to purchase one of those lots, they would obviously need to consider the uses that are near to them, but it's not really something we need to consider or required by the scheme to consider.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore. Councillor Fox, any further question?
If people from the community raise this issue during the consultation phase, will that come back to council? Or will it not be included?
Through you, Mayor, it would be included and referenced in the Section 39 report that would come back to council for consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I had Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Cordover, then Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. This is probably to Mrs. Tyler Moore. The two blocks of land are separated by the walkway to the Cape Queen Elizabeth, and it's the walking track there, and there's a small car park. Now, the car park is inadequate and we have tried for some time to have the car park enlarged. This car park is right next to what will be Lot 1, and the parking is really difficult in this area. They park right along the main road and across in front of what will be Lot 1. Has any consideration been given to ensuring that the car park is enlarged before this goes through?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it's not before us as part of the application to address that car park. That would be something separate to this application and would need to be considered by council whether they're going to pursue trying to acquire land for that or make a modification for that. That would be part of our assets team that would look at that, not the planning department. And so, therefore, no, there hasn't been any consideration of that as part of this consideration to rezone the land.
So just to get it clear, so the fact that Lot 1 is right against the walking track and there is parking right along the road there continually because of the overflow, we can't take that into consideration in the in allowing this lot to be developed?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it wouldn't give you right to do a public acquisition to acquire land for parking in that area. It wouldn't give you the power to do that. The boundary exists now, so if people are breaching and crossing over that boundary, then that's a breach already. This isn't changing that boundary. That issue must already exist. I'm not familiar with the issue. I'll just take it on your advice that that's what's occurring. But if they're already trespassing by parking on there, then that's an existing issue and this rezoning won't affect that.
No, they're parking along the main road in front of Lot 1.
The boundaries already exist and aren't changing in that sense, so I don't see that there would be a justification for us to change that as part of this amendment.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastow. Next I have Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Grace, then Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question on this is on page 11 at 4.13, consideration of environmental impacts. The report reads, quote, "The proposal will contribute to the protection of large areas of native vegetation containing both threatened vegetation communities and threatened species habitat, including 40 spotted pardalote and swift parrots. The vegetation is contiguous with and provides an important buffer to the Bruny Island Neck Game Reserve." My question on this is, how was that contribution assessed? How do we know that it definitely will protect large areas? Is it simply as a result of it not being used for agricultural use and the associated Part 5 agreement that will be attached to the title, or is there more to it than that?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
It will be protected through the way that the subdivision utilises the ratio that they can to subdivide, so it's 1 per 20 hectares. So it doesn't mean that each lot has to be 20 hectares, it's just giving you a ratio. By putting in the additional new lots, it's using up that ratio, if that makes sense, and the remainder of the land will therefore stays as it is, and there's the Part 5 agreement. I've not been to the site, but my understanding is that much of that site would be underdevelopable anyway, but I wouldn't necessarily quote me on that, and that also just gives some hope that it will be protected into the future.
Thank you, and I guess a follow-up question, I think I get it, but is it fair to say that it will be better protected after this subdivision happens, or this rezoning rather happens, as opposed to how it is right now? Because my assumption would be the way that it is right now is surely also protected, but I think I'm interpreting that there will be greater protection after this takes place. Is that correct?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it's more that this outcome is better than another outcome that could be proposed by an owner of that land. They could choose to subdivide it in a different manner. That would not necessarily protect those assets.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Ms. Tyler-Moore. My second question is about the Aboriginal heritage. So this is 4.25 under other matters on page 13. There are four recorded Aboriginal heritage sites within 2187 Bruny Island Main Road that were recorded in the 1980s as part of an assessment focused on the Bruny Island Neck Game Reserve. The thrust of my question is about what is an unanticipated discovery plan? What does that look like? Is that available to the public? And I guess what protections are in place through Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania to make sure that this actually happens and that Aboriginal heritage is protected on that side?
The Aboriginal matters are not really touched upon in the planning system and the planning scheme, as we've discussed in other applications, such as the Huntingfield subdivision. So this has become apparent during desktop research, and I believe was also raised by the applicant as part of their application. Strictly speaking, under planning, we don't have to consider Aboriginal matters, and I'm not suggesting that there's agreement about how that works, but that is what it is. So the protection of relics and artefacts and sites is all managed by Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania, and they need to work in that work plan. In the event, my understanding is that in the event that relics or artefacts were found, they would be required to stop works and follow the protocol set by Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania. So it's not actually something that council is involved in. We're supportive of it and glad to see that it has come up early in this one, but it's not strictly a requirement of planning.
Thank you for that answer. And just to finish my contribution, Mayor, it's obvious that when not acting as a planning authority, we need to be doing more to advocate to strengthen Aboriginal heritage protection and, I guess, to engage more closely with First Nations people for whom Bruny Island is so important. But with respect to this proposal, Mayor, I think it is good that this will provide some protection to large areas of Bruny Island, and the way that it's been laid out in the report leads me to believe that this is a good thing. I will say that the public consultation element of this is going to be so crucial, and I really welcome community feedback about this. But as it stands, I'm comfortable with this proposal as presented, and I support the officer's response. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I have Councillor Grace, who is on mute. So before you speak, Councillor Grace, if you could unmute yourself, please.
Got me?
Thank you, yes.
Mayor, I'm a little bit sceptical. This is not very, in my terms, you know, my terms of the way I speak, is not consistent with our planning scheme, because what we're dealing with now is for rezoning only. We go over to page 50 or whatever it is, and then we've got another application for a two-lot subdivision on the same thing. Then we go over again and we've got an application for two dwellings. Doesn't make sense. How can we give approval to subdivide the two blocks of land until this is, you know, it's a bit shady in the fact that this should have came forward first for the rezoning.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. I'll get Ms Tyler Moore to answer that, but please don't use phrases like shady, because this is this is not something inappropriate that council is doing. These sort of scenarios have been before us before. The two dwellings that you refer to are actually at a separate location. They're in Blackmans Bay. They're not to do with this application. So whilst the following one for subdivision is, I'll get...
Sorry, I meant the two blocks. Yes, you're right.
I'll get Ms Tyler Moore to explain the process to you, please.
Through you, Mayor, as mentioned earlier, this is a Section 43A application, which is specifically an application to rezone and undertake development and or subdivision. So in this instance, it's the rezoning of the land of the two parcels and then one of those two parcels to be subdivided, and they're done concurrently. That's the requirement of Section 43A applications. It's something we do often and regularly, so it's nothing unusual in that. It's a requirement that they have two separate reports in this format. And in the event that the rezoning is not allowed or isn't approved by the Planning Commission, the subdivision can't go forward. But in saying that, if both of them go through, the developer is not obligated to develop the site as per the subdivision. So they get the rezoning. And that's just how it's set by the state government.
But it doesn't make sense because, to me, it just doesn't make sense because I can name other parcels of land, but we're not dealing with that. I'm only dealing what, and I'm allowed to deal with what's in front of me. But as I said, it's got the horse before the cart because this should have been rezoned and then an application for a subdivision. Even, and you're talking about 43A. Anyway, I'm just sceptical of the whole thing, and mentioned before the airport, which council still own and council is still responsible for it, even though it's leased. I don't see anywhere in here where maybe a Part 5 agreement should be on, particularly the subdivision or the rezoning, to inform whoever buys those blocks of land that they're right beside that airstrip. So in other words, when the planes are flying over their house when they finally build them, they can't come back to council and say, oh, we didn't realise the planes were going to come over our house. You follow what I mean? It's just, I mean, I have no problem with the subdivision, but it just doesn't click in my brain, this 43A, and then the next thing we're going to deal with is two lots of land.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. So as Ms Tyler-Moore just explained, the planning laws under which we have to deal with this suggest that the two matters can be dealt with concurrently. So in the event that the rezoning does not go through, then obviously the subdivision is unable to proceed.
I understand that, but why are we dealing with the subdivision? Well,
because the state government has written that into the planning laws and we have to follow the state government's planning laws. This isn't a case where we can pick and choose when we deal with things when we like. We have statutory obligations to deal with these matters in line with the regulations and the laws set down by the state government, and that's exactly what we're doing in this situation. It's like many other instances where at one time or another, I think all of us around the table have had concerns about aspects of things to do with the state planning scheme where we've been forced into making decisions that we haven't wanted to make because it is the law and we have to assess in accordance with it. So I'm sure we all share your frustrations, but we are following the procedures here that the state government has set down.
Just one more question, and I'm looking now on page 63 where it recommends for approval.
So, Councillor Grace, you can't go to page 63 because that's in the next item. We're dealing with the number one of 2021 at the moment. So when we come to that next item, you can deal with matters on page 63.
Yeah, because I was only going to mention it because it relates, but if that's how you want it done, I'm quite happy to wait.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, councillors, for asking questions. And Councillor Grace, I do hear you in regards to the tricky in understanding this matter, and I did phone call Ms Tyler Moore, thanks for your time this afternoon, just to clarify that, because it does provide us with a sort of, oh, you read it and think, oh, what's going on here, why are we hearing this before that? But as councillor, as the mayor explained, it is part of our planning authority. So thanks everybody for the explanation of that and making it really clear, and I think that's a really important note for the community as well, because I'm sure there can be some confusion in regards to that as well. Just on that matter, just another clarification. So it was great that Councillor Fox asked if there are matters of concern regarding the Bruny Island airstrip and representations in regards to that, but it does come back to Council. I forget what section that was of the Act that it will come back. So I'm just seeking clarification. So if it goes through the process of the 3 weeks, and then it comes back to council and there is representations, like where is our authority, or where do we sit in regards to that? I guess again, we act as a planning authority. What if there is a significant number of representations and the council then finds some other areas that aren't meeting the planning authority?
Ms. Palmer.
Through you, Mayor. So in the Section 39 report, we will list all the representations and there and summarise what their concerns were, obviously, because some people have similar concerns. Then we will write a response as to whether or not it should be changed. So it might have some commentary as an example. If people were raising things that weren't relevant, we would make that clear and say no change is recommended. If, for example, everyone said there was something really significant that we hadn't picked up, then we might say that when we write to the Planning Commission with our Section 39 report that it should be modified to incorporate or leave this out or add a condition that would deal with that matter.
Great. Thank you. That's good clarification. In regards to the Cape Queen Elizabeth walking track, is that a national park area? National Parks manage that?
Yes, it is.
Stone's nodding. Walked it a few times. I'm wondering, so they'll be engaged in some sort of notification in regards to that the land is in proximity to the walking track parks. So will parks be notified? I guess we probably won't reach out to them, but I guess they will. Good for them to be made aware, I guess, is what I'm saying, because Councillor Vestoren raised some really significant points there.
Through you, Mayor, but yes, they will be notified. Notification will also occur in the Mercury. There are some of those state departments do keep a lookout on those notifications as well, but they will receive their letter because they're an immediate neighbour.
Okay. Thank you. And just to note as well, Councillor Cordova said in regards to the Aboriginal heritage matters, just a point, it would be great if this area of planning scheme was strengthened. But there's nothing we can do about that now, but I just want to put that on record.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. If there are no further speakers, Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? No? Thank you very much. So there is a recommendation as printed on page 14. It was moved by Councillor Gladewright. It was seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please raise your hands. So those in favour are Councillors Wass, Bastone, Gladewright, Westwood, Midgley, Street, Fox and Cordova and Reet. Those against? Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. Could I just, before I move to the next item, could I just explain to those people who are watching along at home, I've been alerted to the fact that because we use Microsoft Teams, only 9 of the 10 of us are on the screen at any one time. So periodically, Councillor Street disappears and sometimes Councillor Westwood disappears. So that's something we're going to have a look at for future meetings, but it seems that maybe either alphabetically or whoever was last on drops off because Teams only, when we stream it, can only have 9 faces showing at one time. So please be assured that all of our councillors are present this evening, and I will make sure when we're voting that I read the names of all those who are voting so that everyone can see who votes in which way. So we turn now to page 50. It is a development application for subdivision creating 2 new lots and the balance at 2015 Bruny Island Main Road, Great Bay, Bruny Island, under DAS 2021/3. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Thank you, moved by Councillor Gladewright, and a seconder in Councillor Westwood. Thank you. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I note that this is a subdivision application which is seeking three new lots. It says that at 4.9 in other matters, subtitled Aboriginal Heritage, I note that the only disturbance that will be directly caused by this application will be the new access points, which are contained with an already highly disturbed road corridor. So that's good to note. And the conclusion of the report says that the application for subdivision is recommended with recommended for approval with a whole list of conditions. So so moved.
Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. Do I have any further speakers? Councillor Grace, unmute yourself first, please. No, you're on mute, Councillor Grace. Thank you. That's right. We can hear you now. Thank you.
Again, I'll raise the point, and again, I'll vote against it because, again, I think it's I haven't seen this in my time, I don't think, while on council, but it says here on the recommendation that the planning resolved that the development application for the subdivision creating two new lots of balance at 215 Bruny Island Main Road by PDA surveyors be approved subject. Okay, it's got all the conditions, but it doesn't say in any conditions to inform a Part 5 agreement because of the airstrip. It doesn't say in this recommendation, and I guess it should say, if the rezoning failed, the subdivision fails, because it's not written in here, even though you're telling me, yeah, well, even though we know if the rezoning fails, the whole thing fails. It just, anyway, again, I just find it strange. So, and I am concerned about the airstrip. We talked about the airstrip before. That's been used quite a bit now, I believe. Also, I understand that a helicopter now has been purchased to be used on that site. And two houses and something flying over the top of them, as Councillor Fox may remember, many years ago when that one was out Sandfly, I think it was, I can't remember, and those light planes were flying all over the houses. The number of complaints we got in was unbelievable. Anyway, I'll leave it at that, Mayor. That's just, I know I'm going to get criticised because I know the people, and that's my honest view of the assessment of it. I have no personal assessment of it. It's just that I just don't understand the whole procedure of it.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Just for clarification, on page 51 under 1.3, it says very clearly the application for rezoning, which is PSA 2021-1, must therefore be approved in order for the subdivision application, which is the one we're dealing with now, to proceed. So that is in accordance with the state planning laws. I don't know whether Ms. Tyler Moore would like to add anything else to that, but there it is in writing as an assurance of what the procedures are. Ms. Tyler Moore, did you have anything to add?
Nothing to add, but yes, you're correct. It is written in this report, and it's written in the report before about how the two work together and how the Section 43A works.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Next I had Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Bastow, and then Councillor Westwood. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My two questions on this one are firstly about bushfire, the bushfire hazard management plan, and it says that this complies, but I was just hoping for some more detail about how is it that this area, which is obviously bushfire prone, and looking at the site map, you know, it's quite clear that this is in a bushfire hazard area. Can we just get a bit more detail about why and how this proposal complies with bushfire requirements?
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor, thank you for the question. However, I can't just offhand give you the details of that. I would need to read the report. Generally, it is to do with where the envelopes are placed, so they designate that the envelopes are going to a certain area, and that's where that Part 5 agreement comes into to tie it together so they found the best location. Often we'll find that the envelopes we've put on already clear the areas to try and reduce that, and it may also come with requirements that they have to build the houses to a certain bow level. So for this particular application, I'd have to look at the report to give you those answers, but it would take me just some time to do that.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Tylemore, for that. And it does say on page 70 that it has to be to a the separation distance is required for BAL 19 for all lots, so it does speak to that. My next question is actually about that Part 5 agreement, and again, it's one about just clarity, just so that I am clear on it. The Part 5 agreement, it says at item 2 in the recommendation on page 63, prior to the permit coming into effect, the owner must enter into a Part 5 agreement with and to the satisfaction of council to the effect that the measures contained within the certified subdivision bushfire hazard report and associated bushfire hazard management plan must be implemented in relation to any future developments on lots 1 and 2. I would just like to understand that, so the Part 5 agreement relates to bushfire management, but does it also relate to biodiversity protection and environmental protection? Because what I got from the previous debate was that as a result of the Part 5 agreement, we will have large areas of land protected, and I just want to see how the Part 5 agreement relates to that.
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor, Condition 2 requires Part 5 agreement related to bushfire. Condition 3 relates to the vegetation conservation as well. They're just split up because they're easier to manage and deal with the applicant and easier to understand the applicant. But they both require Part 5 agreement, so it would all go in the one Part 5 agreement, or they can be separated as well. So Condition 3 is the one about the vegetation protection and habitat values.
Thank you for that answer. And through you, Mayor, just to conclude, indeed, at 3B on page 64, it says that it provides further protection for all native vegetation and habitat values within the conservation zone. This is one area where, you know, I lament that we don't have the appropriate, in my opinion, the appropriately rigorous enforcement mechanism to make sure that people, when they undertake these agreements, that they do protect this land in perpetuity, that they do actually protect the area that they said that they would protect. But with some degree of faith, I think that this is a strong protection, and I'm pleased to see that Part 5 agreement will be entered into. So I support the proposal. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I have Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I go to look at subdivision in the Environment Living Zone checklist. And when it comes down to ways and public open space, it said there's no acceptable solution about how public open spaces should be provided in new subdivisions, and it's not applicable. There's no open space provided. This is an area where there is an inadequate car park abutting this thing, this second or the lot number one. Surely we can now ask for public open space from them rather than a cash balance or a cash donation, because this is a place where we really desperately need some public open space for the parking of people who are walking the Cape Queen Elizabeth track. So I can't understand, and perhaps Mrs. Tyler Moore can tell us, why we haven't asked for the open space rather than just a cash contribution.
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor, I would need to look at the policy again, but I don't know that the building a car park counts as public open space. I need to look at the detail about that. As we know, that policy did come up recently for review, but generally it is to not just install the utilities, which a car park would be considered as in association with that. However, because this is section 43A and it is going to go out to public consultation, it may be something that comes up by the public or by councillors, and we can certainly have the opportunity to look at that and provide commentary as to whether that condition should be changed to be a contribution instead of a cash and no contribution.
Right, so just let me get this clear. If we pass this tonight, we can still go back and ask for a contribution of land rather than the money.
Through you, Mayor, potentially, but only if it comes up in response to representation. So the Section 39 report is about those representations, and yes, it could raise a recommendation to the TPC that the conditions of the permit be amended to say otherwise. So it's not that we would change it, it's that we're writing to the TPC and saying, well, we've listened to all these things, and whilst we thought this was the best outcome to start with when we put it up, we've now considered the representations, and now we suggest that it should be worded in this way.
Right, thank you. Well, I can't support this as it is because I know how desperate that car park is to be enlarged, and this would mean that if this got through as it is and we didn't get enough representations, that car park will never be able to be enlarged. And that's a real shame because, as we all know, walking is a great physical exercise and the Queen Elizabeth Track is a really nice walk. So I will not be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastine. Next, I have Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Considering the constraints of the planning scheme, I was just wondering about some advice that we got from Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania, who advised the applicant there are four recorded Aboriginal heritage sites within 2187 Bruny Island Main Road. The property does not appear to have been comprehensively assessed. The four recorded Aboriginal heritage sites, therefore, are highly unlikely to reflect the full extent of Aboriginal heritage across this property. Similarly, there are no recorded Aboriginal heritage sites within 2015 Bruny Island, thus very likely to be undetected Aboriginal heritage on this property also. Just wondering in terms of mitigating any risk there, on page 66, page 62, it says, if at any time during works Aboriginal heritage is suspected, the process outlined in the unanticipated discovery plan should be immediately implemented. Likewise, it says that all works personnel should be made aware that all Aboriginal heritage in Tasmania is protected under the Aboriginal Heritage Act, and should be suitably briefed and understand the process outlined in the unanticipated discovery plan. Just wondering, that unanticipated discovery plan, is that something that council prepares or asks the applicant to prepare? And how do we ensure that people on site are aware that that exists?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, as discussed earlier, we don't have much jurisdiction over Aboriginal heritage matters under the planning legislation. This is something that's come up because they're aware of artefacts that were already on the site, or sites that were on the site, rather, and it had the opportunity to have an investigation and it was referred to Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania, but it's actually no link or requirement under LUPA. Council has no way to enforce this or require it. That's why on the planning permit, it's an advice clause in clause D to make them aware of that, to do our best we can to fly the flag of watch out, you've got responsibilities and duties here, but technically it's not for us to enforce. It's not for us to impose either through a planning permit. So we would hope that certainly the applicant in this instance is well aware of those matters because it was discussed through the process and it is an advice clause on that permit. And in the really ideal world, a copy of planning permits would be given to all contractors involved in it, because as we are aware, there's other conditions that we often impose on planning permits, such as tree protection measures, or other areas that have been cordoned off, or things to do with protecting waterways from silt washing down into them. So in the really ideal world, they would be giving it to all their contractors so they're all aware of their obligations and the elements on site that should be protected, but we have no power to force that upon them, but certainly encourage the greater community and all developers to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore.
Next I had Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I did come to this with an open mind, and after listening to the councillor discussion, the Aboriginal heritage matters are of particular concern, and I understand, Ms. Tyler Moore, the constraints that we have in regards to our position in council for that. But also, Councillor Bastone's point in regards to the public open space and the walking track, and with more the national, with the overseas borders opening, that car park is just going to get more full. And I have, and I know that we can't compare this to other matters, but I have noted once or twice before I was on council, where public open space was raised in representations, but then it wasn't taken into account when the subdivisions occurred. So, Mayor and Ms. Tyler Moore, I do have significant concerns that if we don't make this something to be highly considered now, that we will lose any opportunity to put in the car parking for public open space later on. So I just don't know how we can be absolutely assured that this will happen when we consider the representations, if people do put representations in, and Parks and Wildlife might put representations in. But I just don't feel absolutely reassured to support this, knowing that that could be a possibility in the future. And as Councillor Bastone has raised this matter, and it is a high priority for the Bruny Island Community Association as well.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I take the point, and if the issue is as described, and like I said, I'm not aware of the car parking issue on that walk, I would think it would be very likely that it's going to be raised through those representations, and I think certainly we should have a good look at it. Because in the meantime, whilst it's on the public notification, council officers can take that opportunity or that time to have a look at the feasibility of that or the possibility of that occurring as a contribution, and how that may in fact impact those allotments. So I think it would be something that's going to come up, and I don't know that refusing the application at this point and stopping it, putting the whole thing to a grinding halt, which would mean you wouldn't get the car park anyway because you've refused, the application's been refused, would be my suggestion that the recommendation be supported and that officers make sure that we respond to that representation about that car park going forward. Because we must be open-minded that there may be a reason why the car park's not suitable, and I'm not suggesting that there is a reason, because I don't know the car park or that stretch of road. So it's something we can look into, and I don't think if it went through tonight that's going to cut you off from having that consideration.
Thank you. I now have Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a question relating to that car park option. Would it strengthen this? Is it possible, is my question, to add an amendment that would strengthen the possibility to add the option for public open space in lieu of cash contribution? Is that an option we have available to us to add that as a condition in right now to keep that option open?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Sorry, Mayor, my internet just dropped out at the start of the question.
Yeah, so Councillor Cordova just asked whether it was possible to add as a condition to the permit the public open space contribution for the car park.
Or the option for it.
The option.
Through you, Mayor, yes, the councillors are able to amend the conditions. We'll be doing it on the fly, but I think it might be a bit fraught with danger if it was written as that is definitely what you want, because we haven't actually considered is that the best option or where the site's is going to be. So as an example, you would need to say which of those lots it would be. You'd need to give some sort of direction about where it's to occur. And without an engineering design, it's a bit running on the fly. And if you're too open-ended, you might run into an appeal situation with it as well.
Thank you, Mayor. My original question was, could we add the option? So not being definitive tonight, but make sure that there is enshrined in a condition that we have the option. But I believe Councillor Bastone has something like that. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, so I've actually got Councillor Fox next and then Councillor Bastone in order. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I was thinking still about the airstrip, and I'm wondering whether, in fact, the airstrip would be seen as an existing use right, and whether the rezoning would have any implication on an existing use right or not. If it doesn't, then it would be quite capable of continuing to exist. But if it did have an impact, maybe we should also have a condition that that the residents or future residents or properties be made aware of the ongoing use of the airstrip in the foreseeable future, something to that effect.
I would think when you buy a property, you would know if there was an airstrip next door, but Ms. Tyler Moore perhaps could give us some advice on that.
Through you, Mayor, I don't think it's the place of the planning permit to put that warning on there. I think people do due diligence on their property purchase, and there's any number of things that might upset people when they buy properties, whether that be a highway, an existing factory, a marina, those sorts of things, and it's certainly not a precedent that we would want to start setting up, because in the event that you don't put it on there and somebody thinks that they should have been given the right and notified, I think you're just really opening up quite a large can of worms that makes it hard. I do appreciate it that it is there, but yeah, due diligence in their own should be looking at what's nearby to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bastone.
Can we move to defer this until Mrs. Tyler Moore has either been out and had a look at the site, so that she understands exactly where it is, because it would affect lot one, not lot two, and till we can write something that's not on the fly tonight.
Well, I imagine that the author of the report has, our strategic planner would have done a site visit in conjunction with this, but I also suspect that we probably do have some timeframes from a statutory perspective that we need to consider before we can move a motion of deferral, but I'll defer to Ms. Tyler Moore.
Yes, Mayor, there are statutory timeframes that we need to meet, and I would need to look at what they are, but typically they come close to the council meeting because of the long lead up time to go to a council meeting. In the event that extension of time, we always ask for our extension of time to a certain point. If we ask for another extension of time and the council and the applicant refuses that, then the decision can be made by the general manager. But that means it's not coming back to the council meeting. So councillors would need to decide if they're comfortable with that or not, because we can't just push it out because we wish to push it out. There are statutory timeframes. And yes, the officers who wrote the report and the other officers involved have been to the site and are familiar with the site. But with respect to looking at feasibility or appropriateness of putting a car parking, we would really need to work with engineering services and the assets team to that. And that may, I'm not sure what their timeframes are, but I certainly appreciate the concerns that are raised, and the idea is quite possibly a good idea if it's possible to fit it in.
Councillor Bastone, did you have anything further on that? No, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm trying to frame as a question that I Do others agree with me that it's a good idea to delegate this to the general manager? Because I think reading the room, we all want that public open space to make sure that the car park can happen. I don't think we have enormous issues with this particular proposal, except that we want to make sure that this car park thing can happen. So do other people agree, or do council officers think it's a good idea to defer it, but give it the authority to the general manager to make sure that car park?
Just to clarify what Ms. Tallamore said, it wouldn't necessarily automatically be delegated to the general manager. It would only be if we asked for an extension of time and the applicant refused it, would it then be a decision that would be delegated to the general manager because we weren't able to meet the deadline. So just to provide that clarity, I don't know, Ms. Tallamore, if you'd like to add anything else to that.
No, nothing further to add.
Through you, Mayor, how impossible is it to craft some words tonight? Is that impossible?
I think what Ms. Tallamore indicated earlier, that there would be some difficulty, and she would caution against doing an amendment to the permit on the fly, because that could put us in a situation of not being accurate with the information that we provide, and then having this being the subject of appeal, and of course then the subsequent flow on of legal costs to council, hence ratepayers. So if councillors were of the mind that they wanted to explore the option of public open space contribution towards land for a car park, then my suggestion would be that we ask for an extension of time, and we do that by deferring the matter now.
Thank you, Mayor. Can I just ask if Mr. Smee has something to add to that?
Mr. Smee? Yes, he's got his hand up, Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to pick up on Ms. Tallamore's earlier point that you can't take public open space to build a car park. That you can only take public open space for public recreation purposes. And in this instance, whilst there is a walking track, it's not a council-owned walking track or council-managed walking track. It's the state government parks and wildlife walking track, and the responsibility to provide car parking for that track rests with the state government. So I've got some concerns around the proposed taking of public open space by council that's not in accordance with the provisions of legislation that enables you to take that public open space.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Where does that land us back?
If I may, Mayor.
Yes, certainly more.
If the councils were of a mind to defer it and ask for a request for an extension of time, it would provide us the opportunity to look at the policies Mr. Samin suggested and look at any other possibilities. But, of course, you run the risk that they refuse an extension of time, it goes to the general manager, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it still can't be considered some way through that process. The other thing, I just haven't had the opportunity to look up, it's very hard to listen, do teams and read a report at the same time, is which I need to double check, is whether if the 43A application is in fact refused, that they may be prohibited from making an application for the same thing for the next 2 years. But I need to double check that. It certainly applies to parts of it. It is made harder because it's in the form of provisions, as we discussed before, not under the LUPA, so it does take a little while to have a look, but that is an element that I'm aware that occurs, but I would need to double check if it's a decision made by the TPC or by council.
Okay, so I can't see any further hands up. If there are no further contributions, then I'll ask Councillor Gladewright if she'd like to sum up.
Thank you. I feel assured by the information given by the council staff that the community will be given a good opportunity to present their representations, and that will come back to us under a Section 39 report, and I think at that point that's the time for us to have the discussion. It seems pretty convincing that the Bruny Island Group will raise the car parking at that time, so I think that that would be the best time to have that discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. I'll now put the recommendation as printed on page 63, which is a development application for subdivision creating two new lots and balance at 2015 Bruny Island Main Road, Great Bay, Bruny Island. All those in favour, please raise your hands. In favour, there is Councillors Street, Fox, Gladright, Westwood, Wass, Cordova and Reet. Those against, please raise your hands. Against is Councillors Grace, Bastone and Midgley. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 75, which is DA 578 2021, an application for two multiple dwellings at 16 Tingera Road, Blackmans Bay. As I have declared a conflict of interest, I will hand the chair over to the Deputy Mayor and exit the meeting for that period of time. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I assume we'll send the Mayor a message when we're finished, or someone will. So we have before us DA 2021-578, application for two multiple dwellings at 16 Tingera Road, Blackmans Bay. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that, please? Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. As you've said, we have a development application before us sitting as the planning authority for an application for two multiple dwellings at 16 Tingera Road, Blackmans Bay. Whilst I accept, Deputy Mayor, that there have been representations against this development, and I do understand the concerns that were raised, I think council staff have adequately responded to those submissions and representations, and the development application does fit within a planning scheme when it's conditioned, as staff have done. And so I think it leaves us with little choice but to approve the DA as it's been conditioned by staff in the report, and I certainly thank them for the work that they have done on this matter.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Street, for providing a good summary and also noting the public consultation representations. A lot of them were in concern to the privacy of the windows, overlooking the balcony and things from the other dwellings. Some non-compliance that council staff have stated that it does in regards to setbacks, and also in regards to raising matters around traffic and parking issues, stating that there wasn't enough parking on site, and council staff have responded regarding that it does provide 5 car parking spaces and 1 visitor car parking spaces. And so I will support this development. We'll be seeing a lot more of this across our municipality, and these are some of the matters that we're facing in regards to the planning scheme and the criteria that staff have to assess it against.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Do we have any other councillors who would like to make a contribution? For my contribution, I do also note that 4 representations were received against the proposal concerning front setback, building envelope, privacy, impact on adjacent lots, traffic and car parking, driveway design, loss of views and change in zoning, noting that loss of views is not something that is considered by the planning authority under the planning scheme. I have read the report that council officers have prepared, and I am also comfortable that it is appropriate that this is made from single to multiple dwellings permitted. It is a general residential zoned area. Currently it is close to transport, close to schools. And I do note that the applicant did change a couple of things and submit amended plans to try and appease some of those concerns that were raised in those representations. I do note on condition watch, so I guess on that we should note that there are 13 conditions. 2B, condition 2B, landscaping plan, I know we've raised this a few times, it must indicate the proposed planting by quality, genus, species, common name, expected mature height and plant size. I don't propose to move an amendment to remove this, but just a reminder that this has come through the planning authority a couple of times and we've deemed that that goes a little bit too far as the role of the planning authority. Potentially not unanimous, but my view is the same. I think that's going a little bit far for someone, especially like me, who's not an avid gardener. But I do support the application. And I think Councillor Cordova, did you have a contribution to make?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And sorry for being so slow to get my hand up. Technology. I just wanted to raise the point that in terms of the desired future character statement, I think it is quite important to reflect on that here. So obviously I have enormous sympathy for those representatives because obviously these neighbourhoods and streets, it really affects people's lives. And, you know, you come to know a street and you think it's going to stay the same and then it changes. And that's upsetting. And I actually have an enormous amount of sympathy for the people going through that. But I just wanted to make the point that what we're looking at here in Blackmans Bay is an area that actually does require infill. We have an enormous number of people coming into the municipality. And they're also doing that at the time of a heightened housing crisis due to a shambolic series of state policy levers that are being pulled. And it does say it, I'm looking at page 78, the implementation strategy for the desired future character statement is that new development should respect the amenity of surrounding residences and the natural landscape. Multi-unit housing should be encouraged to be located in the area surrounding the Opal Drive commercial precinct. And, you know, my understanding from this area, it's probably 550 metres away. So we're talking about a 5-minute bike ride, an 8-minute walk, a 1-minute drive, although I wouldn't recommend it. These are the areas where the infill development is actually beneficial for the community when you take a macro view. We're in a housing crisis and you know, I think that whilst I'm really sympathetic to the representatives, I just wanted to make that point that infill development is actually something that is going to be required if we are to cater for a growing municipality during a housing crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. So we have before us an application moved by Councillor Street. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
Look, only to say, Deputy Mayor, that the one thing that I omitted from my initial contribution was much along the same lines as Councillor Cordova, which is that this is actually quite a large lot in question. And this infill development is exactly the sort of thing that we've been calling for in this area. So while I, again, understand the concerns raised, the matter does fit within the planning scheme and is what council have been looking for in this area.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Can I have a show of hands, all those in favour of DA 2021 578? Have Councillors Grace, Gladewright, Fox, Wath, Cordova, Bastone, Midgley, Street and Westwood. That is carried unanimously. And if you bear with us for a couple of minutes, we will just get our Mayor, Councillor Reet, back online to chair the next section of our meeting.
Acting Mayor, I think Mayor Reet has an interest in that, she pointed out.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Yes, I'll let the Mayor answer that question. My understanding was that the Mayor had an interest and was leaving the room, so to speak, for the item we've just considered, but not leaving the room for this one. But I'll hand the chair back over to you, Councillor Reet.
That is correct. I took advice from council staff in relation to this matter, and I was advised that I'm still able to participate in this one. So we move now to page 107, DA678-2021, development application for intensification of winery use to allow for group dinners and extension of hours of operation at 11 Flower Pot, Jetty Road, Flower Pot, with a recommendation on page 116. Do I have a mover? I have a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. We've got before us another development application sitting as the planning authority for intensification of winery use to allow for group dinners. Again, Mayor, this is a development application where there have been representations made against and in favour of the development application. But I agree with the staff advice that the DA, as conditioned by staff, does comply with the planning scheme. And look, it's one of these matters where, again, I understand the concerns raised by representatives, but again, it does seem to me as though those matters have been adequately taken into account by the developer. Or by the applicant, I should say, and by staff in conditioning the DA as they have. Numbers are limited, hours are limited to 10 p.m. And the use of noise amplification equipment has also been limited to earlier than that as well. And I think that will adequately address a lot of the concerns by representatives. Just note the following matter as well in relation to the zoning of the area and what's being used here. And just, I suppose, my general support for the idea that matters or uses such as this are not necessarily incongruous with agricultural and primary resource areas, and where we can support applications like this within the planning scheme, I think it's certainly important that we do that. We support primary producers and their attempts to diversify and make a living for both themselves and for their employees in what can often be a very difficult industry, and wineries, while they do have an end product different to a lot of agricultural industry, and I think that they can be maligned for that sometimes, they are a really important part of the agricultural fabric of not only the state but also our municipality. As I've said, the application fits within the planning scheme as it's been conditioned by staff, and I commend it to council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Are there any further speakers in relation to this matter? No? If not, I will put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. There is a recommendation on page 116. With four conditions for the approval of the extension of the hours of operation. All those in favour, please show your hands. Okay, so I have Councillor Grace Street, Fox, Gladewright. Is that a hand, Councillor Westwood? Because I can't see one on the screen. Yes, thank you. Sorry, it was just off camera. Councillor Midgley, Bastone, Cordova, Wass and Reet. The matter is carried unanimously. This brings us to the planning session adjourning at 7:03 p.m. We still have quite a bit to go on the agenda. So before we recommence the open session, I'm just going to call like a 3 to 5 minute recess also known as a comfort break. In plain language, this is your opportunity to go to the toilet, ladies and gentlemen. So if those at home can just be patient, we will just have a very short break and be with you in under 5 minutes. Thank you. Okay. We've had a little bit longer than 5 minutes. Let's hope we've nearly got everyone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Beautiful. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much. We're now good to go. I've got the okay from Ms. Adams. So I should have mentioned earlier, the Planning Authority adjourned at 7:02 p.m. The open session recommences at 7:09 p.m. We are now on page 124. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions currently being actioned. Petitions that were received during the last period, at the time the agenda was printed, there were no petitions that had been received. Still on page 124, we get to the officers' reports to council, the first one being the Kingborough Cycling Strategy 2021-2030, with a recommendation on page 128. I'm looking for a mover, which I believe might be Councillor Midgley as chair of KBAC. Yep, moved by Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and it's really fantastic tonight to support the Kingborough Cycling Strategy for 2021 to 2030. But before I start my speech, I would like to thank a number of people. Thank you, firstly, to councillors and staff for agreeing to fund the $20,000 from the City Deal funds towards a bike plan. I know back then it was a bit of an aspirational move, and I had to have a bit of a debate around why we should support this. It does really fit in with the whole movement towards active transport. And as we know, petrol prices are rising. People are looking for e-bikes. So it's a really good time that we are putting forward this strategy tonight. Thanks also to Councillor Fox for being chair of the KBAC during the initial rollout of the strategy and the working group and having regular meetings with the KBAC members. And just to acknowledge the huge amount of work by the KBAC members, Cycling South and Bike Network Tasmania during the initial stages for this. It was a vision that they'd had for a long time, and it was great to see it come to this fruition. Thanks to Council staff members, Mr David Reeve, Mr Anthony Vidal, Ms Sue Sprott in regards to this, and also the other Council staff that have been involved. And I note that many Council staff have been involved in assessing the integrity of the plan to put forward as to how it is today. And the consultants from Sensible Transport Solutions, who took the time to cycle with KBAC members on weekends and attended a number of visits to meet with staff and cycle around the municipality to really put this together on quite a tight budget for them. We know how much we pay for many strategies and feasibility studies, so to get what we've got is really good. So just to speak a bit more on the strategy and the consultation, we'll note that the strategy was put to community consultation between the 19th of October and the 20th of December in 2021. It received a high number of engagement responses, with 217 engagements on the website and 23 written feedback. And overall, the feedback was supportive and positive. I did note that there was some concern around some of the routes, but that is great that the community is engaging and that we're doing it right in regards to how we do our community consultation at council. So it's great we can hear the voices regarding cycling in our community, and many non-cyclists as well had a bit of a say. And I note that 56% agreed with the routes identified. And I thank the Kingston Golf Club for their active engagement and the Inverroyal Gardens for meeting with many of the councillors to voice their concerns and discuss matters. Sorry, that's the Inverroyal Gardens, the people who own that beautiful facility. And I do note they have a very wonderful facility they've created there, and it's really fantastic to see the effort and time they've put into their beautiful gardens. So we can see from the feedback a large majority of the engagement responses affirms that many cyclists are concerned about the safety of riding on road in many areas throughout Kingborough and would like to see more bike lanes or separated and shared paths. And so this cycling strategy provides a vision for that. The respondents identified the Kingston to Margate as a high priority link for cycling safety improvements. And during the consultation, I noted there are a few minor amendments to the addition that first came to council. There's been a brief evaluation and review section added on page 8. The Tasmanian Active Living Coalition, thanks for their great feedback to note the strategic links that this strategy has to broader wellbeing initiatives through Tasmanian government, and that's been noted on page 10. The Channel Trail is noted as an aspirational cycling project for the municipality. And some map changes included the Kingston to Kingston Beach shared path link has been conceptually remapped via Beach Road, page 23, and the Huntingfield to Margate off-road shared path network. The conceptual proposed network map has been amended to utilise Crown land in this area, and the feasibility stage of this project would assess all route alignments. And also note, and thanks for community feedback of this really fantastic link that we've noted, is the connecting Spring Farm track to Huntingfield. It's now been included on page 23. And just to note on the maps, that they're deliberately vague and large scale, as they are designed to show a desire for a network of trails across the municipality, including a continuous channel trail between Kingston and Kettering. This is a long-term goal that will require detailed assessment to identify a final alignment for various sections. They're aspirational and they give, they haven't got that full detail, so we can have these great shovel-ready projects for KBAC to work on for the next many years. So to note as well, on Friday was good timing. Thank you, Ms. Fidel, for arranging that. But we've now had this meeting to look at this strategy after this. We had a meeting on Friday with KBAC and they're very happy with the strategy, and we've talked about how we can actually make this strategy a real priority in the KBAC meetings, that we can take action and actually assess how we're going over the next five, 10 years. Time, is it? Okay, that's time. Could I have just a little bit more time, one more minute?
The motion is that Councillor Midgley be given additional time. It's moved by Councillor Gladright, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Looks like that's carried. I've got to do it properly. All those in favour is Councillors Grace, Westwood, Bastone, Gladright, Street, Cordova, Fox and Reet. Those against? Councillor Woss. Councillor Midgley, you have additional time.
Thank you. Sorry, I should have timed myself, councillors. So noting this will be a priority for KBAC and guide direction for the next 10 years. The strategy will form an integral part of the transport planning and recreational strategies for future development and capital works programs for Kingborough. Noting the federal election is coming up, it's time we have shovel-ready projects, and it's fantastic that we have a strategy that notes our shovel-ready projects. So I really like the cycling strategy that it considers bike parking, bike racks on buses. I won't stop saying that. Promotion of safe cycling and a wayfind signage and mapping for the municipality. So that's a really great thing that the consultant identified in regards to wayfinding, how long it takes to get from, say, the council centre to Kingston Beach. Like, it actually changes people's mindset. They can walk or cycle. So I think it has a real benefit for pedestrians and cycling, some of the matters that are raised in the strategy as well. So the strategic and advocacy actions of the strategy have many correlations as well, I think, with the Kingborough Safety Committee. So, councillors, I look forward to hearing the discussion and your endorsement of the Kingborough Cycling Strategy 2021-2030.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there further speakers? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Midgley, for that very good summary of the, you know, there are so many people to thank for this strategy, and it's going to have such terrific outcomes for thousands upon thousands of people over the next 20 and 30 years throughout the municipality. But what I think is really important, in addition to thanking everybody, is to recognise that this strategy is for everyone. It welcomes a holistic and a health in all policies approach. It acknowledges that the majority of the Kingborough population is only likely to consider cycling for transport or recreation trips when separate cycling infrastructure is provided and where it connects to points of interest. So this strategy aims to make cycling attractive to the 78% of the population who are interested but concerned. This group are interested in cycling but require higher levels of separation from motor vehicle traffic before considering cycling. And as I've mentioned before in this forum, I am certainly one of that cohort. The strategy acknowledges that we are a growing municipality and that in the future there will be some tens of thousands of extra car trips if we continue a business as usual approach. And what's important is that at page 151, it says that the business as usual approach, the business as usual scenario, is not a zero cost option. We have a choice now. We are at a crossroads, so to speak, that if we start trying to increase the number of people who are using active modes of transport, then we will decrease traffic congestion and we will make Kingborough a nicer place to work and recreate and visit. So what I like about this is that this strategy is in fact for everyone in Kingborough. It's for people who drive by busting congestion. It's for children for both travel to school and recreation. It's for people who ride to local transport errands such as shopping. It's for commuters who travel short distances. It's for those recreation and fitness fanatics of whom I wish I was one, but sadly I am not. It's for cycle tourists and it's for mountain bikers. It's a strategy that is inclusive and I think it will help everyone in Kingborough in so many different ways. Not just for those 78% of people who we're trying to encourage to lead a healthier, happier and more active lifestyle, but also for those who repudiate cycling, because by getting cars off the road, we're all going to be better off. So once again, thank you to all those involved. Thank you, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Fox, and I absolutely commend the motion. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Do I have further speakers? If not, I just wanted to add a few thoughts myself. I was recently interstate and for a week or so, and during that time I was in an area where there were a large connection of shared pathways, and it actually meant that for once when I went on holiday I didn't get a single Uber or taxi or bus. We either walked everywhere or we got e-bikes, and so I actually came back feeling not only rested but really energetic, and it actually said to me how important it is to have that infrastructure so that you can feel safe. I come from a family where I was never allowed to ride on the road when I was a child because I had a cousin who was involved in a very serious accident. It wasn't in Tasmania, but he was riding his bike on the road. A car door opened and a bus ran over the top of him and picked him up by the scruff of his neck, and he was dragged 20 metres before the bus driver was alerted. So you can imagine he survived it, but that was a pretty horrendous thing. And so I grew up in a family where cycling wasn't encouraged because we had a fear that that would happen to us. And I know that riding alongside cars when trucks and buses come past you, it can be very, very intimidating, particularly if you're not a confident rider. One of the things that I think that we became very conscious of during the brief periods of lockdown that we did have during the pandemic, when you could only go 5 kilometres from your place of residence to exercise, was that if you do choose to walk or to ride your bike during that time, you want actually to be able to get to places in a connected way. And so that's why I was really pleased that we now have these interactive maps on the front page of our Kingborough Council website so that people can see how it all joins up. That's helped to highlight to us, like this strategy has and the work behind it, the gaps that we do have and how much work there is to be done. So I think it's great that we have an aspiration to see what we want to achieve in the future. I think we're realistic enough, all of us around this table, to understand that it is going to come at a cost, but we're fortunate now that we have funding from the state government to go halves with the feasibility study for this, to undertake the work, because this is just the first step. And I know that there has been some concern amongst some stakeholders and residents in the community about the directions that some of these pathways take. There have been some amendments that have been made. Like Councillor Midgley mentioned, I did also, and I know other councillors did, take the opportunity to visit Inverwell Gardens and see the wonderful tourism venture that they have created there amongst their home, and they have, in the 21 years that they've had it, they stopped counting after they planted 12,000 trees, which is incredible. And so I do believe that their concerns are very valid in terms of they are very determined that this should not impact the beautiful native garden that they've created there so lovingly over a long period of time. So for that reason, I did want to put forward an amendment. I did circulate it around to councillors earlier today. So I would like to move that amendment. If councillor, Mrs. Morton could put that up on the screen, and I would like to hand over the chair to the Deputy Mayor so that I could move that amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll just wait a couple of minutes for Ms. Morton to put that up to share her screen for us.
In the meantime, I'm happy to just read that while it's coming up. The amendment is that add the paragraph below and the following paragraph below the map shown at figure 12 on page 22 of the Kingborough Cycling Strategy 2021-2030, which is shown at page 165 of the Council Agenda. And that is an asterisk with the following explanation. The strategy notes this network map is conceptual and subject to a feasibility study to assess all possible route alignments, environmental considerations, and includes comprehensive stakeholder engagement. Where possible, the conceptual proposed network map has been amended to utilise Crown land in this area. Full stop.
Thank you, Councillor Reid, and I do note that you emailed that to councillors earlier today, so I thank you for that. Do I have a seconder for that? I think it was Councillor Cordova, although I'm sorry, on Teams it's a bit hard to tell. So seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please raise your hand.
Could I make a point, please?
Yes.
As seconder of the motion, if the mover of the original motion would be prepared to accept the amendment, then I would be happy to accept that as part of the motion.
Okay. Councillor Midgley, you were the mover. Are you happy to accept the amendment proposed by Councillor Reid?
Yes, I am.
Thank you,
Deputy Mayor. So I'll take back the chair now. So just to clarify, that becomes now part of the original recommendation to endorse this. Look, by way of explanation, I would hope that it gives the assurance to stakeholders, not just at the gardens, but others who may be along the route, that we are trying everything possible to map it in future so that it utilises Crown land rather than traverses private property. Because we appreciate that not everybody has a desire to give up part of their property, and certainly having visited the gardens, as other councillors have, it's very obvious when you see the topography there that it would be very difficult indeed to create a suitable shared pathway through parts of their property without the gradient being too steep in parts, but a whole range of obstacles that were really only could be appreciated through walking through it rather than just a desktop study, which has been done previously. So I really welcomed that opportunity to go through that. I know I did run this amendment by Mr. Reeve earlier. I wondered if he could just give some assurance now with that amendment that that intent would certainly mean that we will not be trying to take any private land, so to speak, for this route. Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. No, so the intention is to actually, when we'll be looking to get some of these ones that have actually been identified in the strategy and bring them down to a project level, will be to work with stakeholders if we need to in terms of any issues that might impact on their land or near their land. So there's certainly no intention to actually look at going or acquiring people's land without actually the agreement of the property owners there. So that will be our intention in the area near the Inverea Gardens. And it would be similar for the other ones where other people have voiced concern as well, including the golf course.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Are there any further speakers? Otherwise, I'll ask Councillor Midgley to sum up. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, and thank you, Councillor Cordova and Mayor, for speaking and also raising that matter. And it's great we have that little asterisk under that map there. And on behalf of KBAC, really, I think they'll be really excited to see that this has passed by Council tonight. And they're really excited to sink their teeth into getting these actions happening. So get on your bike.
That's not long. Normally what you say when you want someone to leave, isn't it? On your bike. Thank you, Councillor Midgley, for summing up. I'll put the recommendation now. It is as printed on page 128, but it does incorporate the additional paragraph that was previously on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Those in favour is Councillors Grace, Cordova, Wass, Gladewright, Westwood, Bastone, Street, Fox, Midgley and Reet. The recommendation is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 206, policy 3.7, purchasing policy, and 3.12, code for tenders and contracts, with a recommendation on page 208. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Street. I know you were wiping your eye, but I'm going with you because you moved and you've also bought a house. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Purchasing and procurement policies are something that I'm quite passionate about. A bit nerdy, I know. I'm really pleased to see that this purchasing policy and Council's Code for Tenders and Contracts has come to us for review and approval, and I'm glad to see that we've adopted a Local Government Association of Tasmania model code for tenders and contracts. One of the things that I really love about this new policy is that a definition of value for money has been included, which was missing from the previous policy. So value for money is extremely important when it comes to the expenditure of ratepayer dollars. So we manage a $40 million plus budget every year on behalf of our ratepayers, and having proper open and transparent policies in place ensures that we spend that money according to best value for our ratepayers. But I'll just read out the definition of value for money, because it's not just about buying the cheapest product at the cheapest price. Value for money at 5.3 means that Council will ensure it is buying at the most competitive price available, but value for money does not necessarily mean buying at the lowest price. In practice, this means that Council will consider the contribution the good or service makes to achieving Council's strategic plans or policies, the value of the acquisition and potential benefits against the cost of that purchase, an assessment of risks associated with the purchase, including the preferred procurement method, how well the works, goods or services will meet the needs of Council, maintenance and running costs over the lifetime of a product, disposal value, time constraints, including supply chain delays, and the impact of procurement decisions on the local economy, such as through industry development and employment creation. So I think this is a really valuable thing to have added, particularly in light of not having anything before. In future, I would like to see sustainable procurement practices also included in definition of value for money, certainly where procurement is headed, because we can use our ratepayer dollars to buy products that are sustainable, also consideration of the social, not just the economic benefits of the money that we spend is really important. So going forward, I would hope that we can consider some of that in our procurement policy. I had a couple of questions. At 5.4, we talk about enhancing local business and industry. Council will ensure that where local capability exists, it will seek to engage the local market and encourage participation in tender and quotation processes. In practice, this means that Council will actively seek quotes from local businesses that are able to provide quality works, goods or services. Where local capability exists, ensure that discretionary elements of specifications do not prevent local business from competing and not give preferential treatment to local suppliers where it cannot be reasonably justified. I was wondering if I could have a definition of local, please.
Mr. Breen?
Oh, yes, through you, Mayor. I guess at this stage, probably where we're looking at for local suppliers is probably more at the lower level type suppliers. So generally we'd look for people within the local community, so people within the Kingborough municipality, if there are those sort of services available.
And do you have a requirement to get a certain number of requests for tenders or quotes from those businesses? Or how does it work in practice?
Through you, Mayor. So basically the purchasing policy gives us our guidelines in regards to how many quotes we need to get. So we'll go to the market, but certainly we give preference to local providers that are available.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. My second question relates to something, not quite sure what page it's on. It refers to in the case of an emergency. I was wondering whether you could please provide some more information of the definition of an emergency.
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, it's a power that's given within the local government regulations for the general manager to make decisions based on an emergency situation. So it would be if, for instance, I guess there's a flood or a fire and we need to procure goods really quickly on the basis of meeting the community needs. So that would be the sort of environment in which the general manager would make those decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. I don't have any further questions. Just to say thank you very much for reviewing the policy, and I think it's a really great improvement on the last one.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Are there any further contributions or questions? Yep, Councillor Grace, you're on mute.
Yeah, am I ready to roll?
Right.
Look, I don't support this. I can write out quite a few issues regarding this policy that particularly I've learnt over the last two or three years with the tendering procedures, etc. Not really conversed, or neither any of us are conversed with the purchasing policy, because we have no idea, because council staff have a figure up they can go to. We have no idea what's purchased over the year. It could be 10 lawnmowers worth whatever. So I think there's a lot of work got to have to be done on this. If this is a statewide tendering procedure, I say no more.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Westwood, for that. For moving this, it is a really good policy and it's a great way forward. And I think that Councillor Westwood has actually touched on something that's so important, and I think it would be really great if in February 2024 we can achieve a really robust sustainability framework. I think it's so important that, and it does mention that we're going to preference local suppliers, or at least it's mentioned what the definition of a local supplier is. Things like supporting local businesses, First Nations businesses, and also making sure that where possible, when you have the option of purchasing something that's 100% recycled, or purchasing something that adds to the circular economy, or purchasing something which is ethically sourced as opposed to just something because it's convenient. I mean, these are the types of choices that are so important. And I recall that recently we have with our banking here at Kingborough Council made it so that now we're giving preferential treatment to those authorised deposit institutions that don't fund fossil fuels. That's an example of where we can use our platform and use our resources for that advocacy role and really achieve some great things, both locally and also further afield. So I think that this is a good purchasing policy, and we'll have to give some thought to making a robust sustainability framework. But I think I'm so pleased that Councillor Westwood brought that up, because there's a terrific opportunity there, I think, to use Kingborough Council for good and also to achieve great things for the municipality. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I have Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, to start off with, just a question. Look, in my day job, I'm quite often called upon to assist small businesses with navigating tenders and contracts policies because they can be quite complex. I'm just wondering whether or not Legat, and I know it's probably outside the scope of what we have resourcing for as a single council, but I'm wondering whether Legat is planning on doing any information sessions with potential tenderers and small businesses for how they might deal with the model procurement policies.
Now, that's an interesting question, and I think I might throw it to the General Manager. He might redirect it to Dr. Stevenson, I'm not sure. General Manager?
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Street, I've taken a note of that, and I'm happy to raise that personally with the CEO of the Local Government Association tomorrow.
Thank you, General Manager.
Look, I really do appreciate that. Like I say, it can be very daunting for the same small businesses that we're trying to support. By having local procurement policies, it can be very daunting for them approaching a code like this one. And that's not to say that there's anything wrong with the policy, because there's not. It needs to be complex. And quite often, this is the same discussion that I have, is that it needs to be complex because what it's trying to achieve is that everybody is on an even playing field. And that when you're tendering, you know that everybody else is playing by the same set of rules, and the council are playing by a set of rules as well when they make an assessment of who we purchase from. And I agree with Councillor Westwood that this is an excellent policy. It's a vast improvement on what we have had previously and on what other councils have had previously as well. And so I really appreciate the time and effort that's gone into bringing it to us. Like I say, the support that we're looking to provide for local procurement is excellent. I just hope that that there might be an opportunity there to run some information sessions as well with potential suppliers to ensure that they understand the code and understand the requirements of them before they launch head first into a tender. The only other thing that I just wanted to mention as well is some of the limits around or thresholds around requirements for tenders. And there's a comment been made about, you know, staff could buy 10 lawnmowers or whatever. Look, I agree with the thresholds for tendering in this policy. And I don't think that ratepayers would think that we were appropriately using our time and resources if we were going through the minutiae of procurement to that level of detail. I don't think for a second that they would expect that we use our time on something like that. And certainly I trust that in terms of procurement for those matters that staff have that in hand through other policies. And I would note as well that it's been my experience through the audit panel that quite often where there are matters of significant importance and the procurement doesn't necessarily reach that threshold, that there are still processes for tendering put in place regardless of what the policy has said previously. So I think we're doing an excellent job on that front, and I commend the policy to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I don't seem to have any other hands up. Before I ask Councillor Westwood if she would like to sum up, I just had one question. Under the current policy, in clause 5.5A4, it indicates that a deposit is required for anybody lodging a tender, and I note that within the equivalent clause in the new policy 6.2, that has been removed, and I'm wondering if we could just have an explanation as to why that has occurred. Who would like to give that?
I'll go. Yeah, that's all right. Oh, yeah, look, through you, Mayor. Essentially, that clause was very rarely used in the old policy. It still is available to us as an option if required, but got very little use in the old policy and therefore wasn't considered necessarily for the new policy.
So if it's still available to us, why are we removing it? Because is there any provision then within the new policy for us to ask for a deposit if it's not articulated in the policy and therefore may not be expected by a prospective tenderer?
My understanding would be the condition of the tender, and we would put it in through those means.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. No further questions. Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up?
Just to clarify that my understanding is that we haven't adopted an entire statewide policy. We have modelled our own policy off a model code that was developed by LGAT. So we have our Kingborough Code for Tenders and Contracts policy, which is modelled off the LGAT model code, but my understanding is that we haven't adopted holus bolus, a statewide policy. And so thank you to staff for putting this together. As I said, it is very important that we make sure we're spending ratepayer dollars in the best possible way, and I think this is a great policy and I ask my colleagues to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. I'll now put the recommendation as outlined on page 208, relates to the policy 3.7 purchasing policy and 3.12 code for tenders and contracts. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Those in favour are Councillors Fox, Bastone, Westwood, Cordova, Gladewright, Street, Midgley, Wass and Reed. And those against? Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 247. It's the January 22 financial report with a recommendation on page 248, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Westwood, your hand seems to be up, so I'll take you because I think it was an error, but I'll still take it, and Councillor Fox is seconding. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, my hand was up. we have before us the financial report for January 2022. This shows a forecast underlying result of a $500,000 deficit or $493,408. There are a couple of variances to the original budget which are noted on page 247. We have some rental income, interestingly, due to revenue for the depot for providing space to store metro buses, and the community hub as a venue hire for the state government's vaccination program. So I guess that's a good use of our infrastructure if we don't have alternative uses ourselves. I had one question in regards to employee costs, $97,000 over budget. primarily due to reduction in the provision for annual leave as a result of employees taking substantial annual leave in the month of January. Glad to see that employees did take some leave in January. I'm just wondering whether that has gone way to reduce the outstanding leave entitlements that we have, whether that's reduced that liability.
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Essentially a substantial reduction in our excess leave over the January period. Normally we have our provision goes up by about 30,000 to 40,000 a month on average for the month. It went down by 200,000 during the month of January, so a pretty substantial decline, and shows that people are choosing to take their holidays during the summer period. During the COVID issues that we're having, and really not travelling as much as they were in the past.
So have we caught up, so to speak, with employee leave entitlements that weren't taken during that initial COVID period?
Through you, Mayor, yes. Essentially, we've primarily caught up. There's always half a dozen people that have excess leave, and we can constantly work with them trying to get their leave down. But the majority of people now have got back to what we would call a normal distribution of leave, which is a good result.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. I don't have any other questions about this report. I just wanted to more generally say thank you to my colleagues on council who have helped over the last 3 years in various degrees to help get us to where we are now. We have done a lot of work to make sure we're managing Kingborough's budget responsibly, and I think we have worked together as best as possible. Given that there are 10 different people around the table with different and competing priorities, I really think that it has been a wonderful outcome, particularly over the last couple of years with so much external uncertainty. I think we've made really responsible financial decisions, and thank you for working together so that we could do that, and thank you to staff for your advice during this period. That's all from me.
Thank you very much, Councillor Westwood. Are there any further questions? I just had a question, and Councillor Westwood had touched on it. Page 247.4.1. The revenue, $53,000 over budget. So rental income for providing space to store Metro buses. I was just intrigued whether that is a regular occurrence, whether it was a one-off, how many buses did we store and for what period of time, and any other detail. I wasn't aware that we had done that, and there were no buses at the depot the other day when I was there. Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Look, my understanding is an ongoing arrangement we have with Metro to store their buses overnight when they're not in use. So we had some spare space within the depot. It has required us to put down a bit of gravel to provide a base for the buses to sit on. My understanding is that that's an annual rental that they will pay every year to council. So a good bit of supplementary income for council on an ongoing basis.
Terrific. And I assume then that the we have sufficient space. It's not impacting on the operations of the depot or inconveniencing the staff at the depot who park there as well. We've got sufficient space.
Hey, through you, Mayor. Look, essentially that's my understanding, and it was the decision of the manager works that they could support the bus parking there on an overnight basis.
Thank you very much. Let's hope it leads to greater bus services in Kingborough, since they're going to be here overnight. Thank you. Are there any other questions? If not, I will ask. I can't see any hands up. I'll ask Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up? No. So I will put the recommendation as printed on page 248, and that is that Council endorse the January 22 2022 financial report. It was moved by Councillor Westwood and I failed to write down who seconded it. I apologise. Who seconded it? It was, sorry, Councillor Fox, seconded by you. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It is yes from Councillors Grace, Fox, Bastone, Westwood, Cordova, Wass, Street, Midgley, Glade Wright and Reet. That motion is carried unanimously. Notices of which motion has been given. At the time that the motion was compiled, there were no notices of motion that had been received. That takes us now to page 269, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. In accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moves into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, Lawless Road extension and Kayuta Tramway Track car parking, delegated authority rates. Do I have a mover and a seconder for that motion, please? Moved by Councillor Glade Wright, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please raise your hands. And that is anonymous, unanimous. You know it's getting late when you start mixing up your words, my apologies. That motion is carried unanimously. So in accordance with Canberra Council Meetings Audio Recordings Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So thank you very much to everybody who has been watching along at home. The open session of Council now adjourns at 7:54 p.m. Thank you.